Way too many first responders are struggling with their fitness, health, and body goals, but you're not alone in that fight. I'm Ted with Fit Responder, and with 11 years experience in law enforcement, as well as being a fitness coach for over 15 years myself, I've created some free resources as well as one-to-one professional fitness coaching for first responders. So I want you to check us out, fitresponder.com, or look us up on Instagram at fit.responder. That's fit period responder. And let's see you there. Chat soon. Thanks and enjoy the podcast.
The Poorly Made Police podcast is for entertainment purposes only. This podcast has explicit content and is meant for a mature audience. The views expressed on this Poorly Made podcast reflect the opinions of the guest and host. They do not reflect the opinion of any department or entity. Nothing on this Poorly Made podcast should be construed as legal or marital advice. If something offends you, I kindly invite you to lighten the fuck up. If you want to support this very poorly made podcast, click the link at the end of the description and become a monthly sponsor of the podcast. Or buy yourself some nice Poorly Made Police Memes merch. Not only does it look good on you, it's also a favorite of wives, exes, children, nurses, nuns, IA investigators, defense attorneys, and the chief. And of course, take care of the fine sponsors of this podcast. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the orgasmic sound of a Crown Vic. Oh, hey there. Welcome to another edition of the Very Poorly Made Police Podcast. I have joining us all the way from the wrong state. He's in the wrong place, but he loves fudge. I have Mr. Fudge. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you?
I'm just living a dream, man. Are you having anything to drink this evening?
I actually am. I don't normally drink. I'm a little bit more of a social drinker, but I have drinks on occasion. So I have with me a Grain Belt Northeast.
What is that?
it's a Minnesota based company. They make I'll be honest, I don't know if they're actually Minnesota based anymore, but they used to be based in Minneapolis.
Probably got burnt down.
I'm looking at the can. It says they're still based in Minnesota, but not in Minneapolis anymore. It's just a lager. It's an American lager.
Okay. I like American lager.
I'll be honest, it's pretty much the only thing I drink. I don't really like liquor. I don't really like any other types of beer. So it's just kind of my go-to.
Hey, simple man. I like that. I got a little Jameson in my cup, a little Jambo right. For the people that hate that I mispronounce it, but you guys can fuck right off. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to do what we always do. We need to know, good sir, how Mr. Fudge, we need your story. How did you end up in law enforcement?
How did I end up in law enforcement? How far do you want me to go back?
You know, you kind of sent me that little bio that it kind of was your origin story. I thought that was kind of interesting if you're open to putting that out to the millions.
Sure. All right. So I was born and raised in the Philippines. My parents were missionaries. They worked at an orphanage there in the Philippines, lived there, went to school there, graduated from high school there. After graduating from high school, came to Minnesota to go to college. My dad's from Minnesota, so kind of makes sense that I came here. I had every intention of I wanted to go into the Marines because my grandpa was a Marine, and I wanted to, my original plan was to go to college and then become commissioned as an officer in the Marines. But I got a little impatient and I decided to enlist instead. I enlisted in the Marine Reserves, and I figured that I could, be in the Marines, but then still go to school and still, pursue that dream of being an officer. But as time went on, I kind of started to realize that maybe the career military life was not for me. And so I kind of started to look at other options, and going into law enforcement kind of seemed like kind of like a natural transition from, serving in the military to, serving, serving the public, serving the community. And after, so I deployed to Afghanistan a couple of years into my contract in the reserves, and that kind of sealed the deal as to whether I was going to continue in the Marines. I didn't want to deal with the bullshit of in the games of the military. I enjoyed my time in the military, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. And but we kind of have a saying, you miss the boys, not the bullshit. And so After getting back, I went to, got back into school, and went to college and got a 4-year degree in criminal justice, because at that time, that's kind of the way things were trending, was, departments, especially around here, wanted to see applicants with 4-year degrees. And Minnesota has a requirement that you have to have at least a 2-year college degree in criminal justice, or a 4-year degree in anything. And, not knowing any better at the time, I was like, criminal justice it is. And so I graduated, but immediately after graduating, I still kind of had some second thoughts about going into law enforcement. I was working at the time at a gun store, and after a while of being there and having graduated, I was like, I kind of wanted to dip my toes into being a first responder and being in law enforcement. And I thought that being a dispatcher might be a good way to go. I knew someone that worked as a dispatcher, and so he kind of talked me through the process, and I got hired and started training. And the agency that I got hired at has a very had a very lengthy process of training. After, I want to say, 8 months, I've been in training for about 8 months. I think it was about like four, I want to say 4 months of like classroom time, and then I had 4 months of training on the dispatch floor. And I kind of started to see the writing on the wall. I was really starting to dread the phone ringing and taking calls, and not really knowing what was on the other end of the line. And I started to realize that, dispatchers have a really hard job. And I can really appreciate the job that they do. Sometimes I have criticisms for our dispatchers, and I feel that they could do better. Having, kind of understanding that line of work. But I felt that I did not have that, little bit that, that special something that, it takes to be a good dispatcher. And so, between that and my mental health, I decided that I was gonna, be done with being a dispatcher. I went back to work at the gun store for a bit, and then I saw an ad on Facebook actually for a local police department. I was like, you know what? I really should get into law enforcement, and because that's what I felt like I was. I realized that was kind of what I felt called to do. And so in Minnesota, after you get your degree, and so I guess some schools have it built into the degree program where you have to go to Skills. So Skills is Minnesota's version of the academy, and it's college based, kind of like Toby's experience.
Yay!
knew that was coming. So I enrolled in a part-time skills program, and while I was working at the gun store, some officers from the agency that I now work for came in, and they were looking to purchase firearms, and so I worked with them on that process. That was one of the things I did at the time, was handling law enforcement sales at the store that I worked for. And I as I was talking to them, I said, hey, you know, I'm in school for law enforcement, or I'm going to school, going to Skills. Are you looking for, you know, community service officers or reserve officers? And they said, well, we are looking for reserve officers. I said, great, you know, sign me up. And so that's kind of how I got hooked into the agency I work for now. After I graduated from Skills, I continued to put in time as a reserve officer, and not too long after I graduated and passed our state licensing exam, they posted a spot, you know, for to promote one of the reserve officers to a full-time sworn officer. And they hired me, and that's where I've been ever since.
All right. I need to go back and ask a couple questions.
Okay.
I have a couple things that came up that I was thinking of while you were talking.
Yeah.
You mentioned your mental health when it came to dispatching. What did you mean by that? Was it just the fucking the call load? Like what exactly was going on with that?
So there are a few things with that. One it is the call load, and you know, just the, you know, just constantly taking phone calls and sitting at a desk, and I found that I like to be able to move around and to get out, and you know, that's the kind of work that we do as police officers. And I hated the idea of sitting at a desk for 10 or 12 hours just answering you know, phone calls, where you know those phone calls are generally people experiencing the worst day of their lives. The other thing is, you know, not really knowing what's going to be on the other end of that line. When you answer that call, you know, it could be, as you know, something as simple and mundane as someone saying, help, you know, I've fallen and I can't get up, you know, to, you know, so, you know, someone screaming their head off because someone just got shot. And I think it's one thing, you know, to be able to experience that in person. And that's certainly, you know, that's it's awful experiencing in person. But it's just as awful, you know, experiencing it in, you know, over the phone. And, you know, I don't know. I guess it just, there's kind of like a, almost like a feeling of like, you're almost not able to help. You can't see, you can't. You know, all you can do is listen and put out that info over the air.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I feel like some people, not, I mean, I didn't want to sound like a dick or anything, and I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but I'm being viciously attacked by a kitten. Sorry. But I was going to say that, you know, some people might hear like, oh, my mental health, I couldn't handle dispatching. Be like, well, holy shit, now you're going to go be a cop. But I definitely get the aspect of it's hard to just sit there and not be able to do something. Whereas a cop, you can do it. And plus, I got to be honest, I'm like you. I struggle just being in front of a computer. I've got to be fucking doing shit or I go batshit crazy. So mental health is more than just, hey, I'm having a hard time with it. It's also like, I'm fucking miserable. This sucks dick.
I would say that it was more just being miserable. The it wasn't so much the stress of like the calls themselves and and dealing with terrible situations, but it was just the just I was just completely miserable being there. And you don't go into it thinking that that's a possibility. And I went into it thinking, hey, I could potentially make a career of this. But after doing it for, that amount of time, I just, again, I came to realize that it wasn't for me.
You know, if may I go on a rant?
Go ahead.
It was probably the first of many. I it's kind of funny now that I kind of think back of my mindset when I was younger, and I know you're probably quite a bit younger than me, but as a young person, I can't speak for everybody, you know, and I got into law enforcement a little later. I was in my late 20s, but before that time, like I thought like maybe I want to be a cop, but I think there was a confidence thing and there was some other stuff going on and I didn't feel like I could do it. I wasn't ready for it. So I didn't really pursue it until then. But when I was looking at jobs then, like people might joke around like I work mall security for a while, but anytime I applied for something else, you know, from the high school age to like the time I left mall security, it was all about, oh shit, I'm gonna make more money. And you don't even like really think about what the job is. Like I applied to work at a jail and I got pretty far in the process and I think I shit the bed on a polygraph, actually. And this is the first time I ever done it. It was fucking wild. And but hindsight being 2020, I am so fucking glad I shit the bed. I didn't want to fucking work in a jail, but it sounded good because the money was good and money's like a very important thing when you're young. Now, don't get me wrong,
Oh,
money's
yeah, for
always
sure.
important. Money's super important, but I feel like a lot of us get to the point, or at least I have. I guess I can't speak for everybody, but like I've gotten to the point where I'm conscious of money and I have kind of a scary financial situation when it comes to like working for myself. It is fucking feast or famine. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's fucking bad. And I live with that. But I live with that knowing that, yeah, there's some stuff. Work is work, right? Like work is always going to be work to an extent. I definitely believe in the whole like, find something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. I'm not going to be a pro fisherman, so that's not going to happen for me. And my time has passed to play professional baseball. My time has passed to be in a band. Like that shit's not going to happen for me, right? But at least I know I can do this, and it affords me at least I make enough money right now. Please buy shit. I make enough money right now to like, I can kind of skate a little bit, but. The other stuff in life is more important. I've referenced this a lot lately. Like, your clock runs out. You're not on this planet to work. Like it is a part of life. You have to work unless you're fucking lucky. You gotta do it. But you realize sometimes like this shit ain't worth the money. And if I can, I would rather make a little less money. Like, I mean, the perfect example, I left a very high paying police department. Pays even more now because I can't fucking keep people. Imagine that. I left that. The best fucking job I ever had in my life. I'll never make that money again. I will never make that kind of money again. And I'm cool with that because life's too fucking short. That's my rant. You're welcome for my service.
So
I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, you know, so when I got hired, as a dispatcher, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why I was thinking like, you know, hey, I can do this for a career. It's not so much different than being in policing, but there was definitely that money aspect to it. You know, I was going to be making more money working there than I had ever made it, you know, any other job I had done. You know, so that, you know, that was kind of tough, you know, to think about that and leaving that behind. But I, you know, like I said, I went back to the working at that gun store that I was working at. And that was a place that I really enjoyed working at. I made significantly less money, but I would say I had a pretty high level of job satisfaction working there. And I'll be honest, you know, and my wife, you know, may hear this, you know, when this comes out and maybe be a little bit surprised, but there are certainly days that I still think about, hey, you know, maybe I could quit and, you know, just go back to working there. Cause I really enjoy it. Like, you know, firearms are a hobby of mine. And I would love to, you know, make money, you know, working in a, you know, working with a hobby that I enjoy.
You know what job secretly I kind of like the best?
What's that?
Delivering pizzas. Easiest fucking job you'll ever have. You get in your car, you fucking crank some tunes, and you deliver pizzas to people. And they give you fucking money. It's awesome.
You know what?
The best. It was a fucking great job.
If you don't think about it too hard, it's a little bit like being a cop.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
You hop in your car, you crank up the tunes, and you go do, you know, you drive around and you do your job.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot, you know, there's more to it than that.
When I get canceled, I got to find a job that lets me drive around, man. Canceled or fail. Whenever that happens, I got to find a job where I don't think I could handle an office or a factory. Like, I got to be fucking moving around or I'm going to fucking go crazy.
That's, one more thing. That's the other job. You know, sorry, just a no, moment. But, you know, that's the other job that, you know, I could see myself doing, you know, aside from, you know, being away from the family, you know, but being an over the road trucker, I could see myself doing that.
Yeah, you get to fucking see the country, man. It'd be neat. And then you got the fucking lot lizards too. You got everything you need.
Absolutely.
All right. Real quick, one more thing on your background, and then you got a fucking it looks like an incredible list. I'm very excited for some of this stuff because I don't even know what you're gonna say. Growing up in the Philippines, I had a boss that was like fucking obsessed. Like all he talked about was he'd served some time in the military, had been over to the Philippines, and I think he had a place in the Philippines, and like all he fucking talked about all the time was the Philippines. He fucking loved the Philippines at nauseam, right? It's like, all right, dude, we get it. Was that a good place to grow up? I mean, is that a safe place? Is it a nice place? I don't know shit about fuck when it comes to the Philippines.
So, you know, being a kid, I think there were, you know, certainly some things I was ignorant of as far as, you know, it comes to, you know, like crime, you know, the crime rates and all of that. But I felt safe, you know, there were certain parts of the country where, you know, there's kind of like, you know, war, you know, ongoing combat between, you know, like the Philippine military and, you know, like communist rebels or the or like the Muslim rebels, MILF, for example. Look it up. MILF is a real thing.
Oh, I know MILF for a real thing, and I love all of you.
Well, that I don't know if this MILF organization would appreciate the MILFs, but you know, maybe they do. Maybe they named it very intentionally.
Perhaps.
But you know, but there would be like, you know, bombings and terrorist attacks from time to time. None ever around where we lived. And you know, one interesting thing that I think about every now and then is that so gun rights aren't really a thing in the Philippines. I think it's become a little bit more of a topic lately, and I think there's been a little bit of an increase in private gun ownership there. But even with, you know, Joe Blow not commonly owning a firearm there were firearms all over the place, because every bank, every restaurant, every mall, every school, every, you know, you name it, business had an armed security guard on every street corner. And I'm sure that they had a wide variety of, you know, training and experience. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them, you know, got signed on and they just got handed a, you know, got handed a gun and some ammo, where some probably, you know, were trained to a pretty high level. You know, and you'd see security guards carrying everything from revolvers to pump action shotguns to 1911s to, you know, I'm sure there were some that were probably carrying AR-15s. So, you know, it definitely, you know, I definitely felt safe growing up there, and I enjoyed growing up there. I think, I, you know, I had experiences that, you know, I never would have had, you know, growing up here.
Was it a tough transition coming there or coming here, rather? I mean, obviously the Philippines is like almost a tropical climate, right? And then fucking yep. Minnesota is cold as dick.
Yeah, so being missionaries, we had regular furloughs, which is basically it's like a break, you know, from doing the work overseas. You know, so we would come here to Minnesota for a year at a time every 3 to 4 years. Okay. So I was familiar with living in Minnesota, and like I grew up as, you know, an American citizen first. So you know, in that aspect, it wasn't, you know, I'm sure that there was some, you know, that there were some aspects of moving here that, you know, I probably did experience some culture shock, but not in the way that, you know, someone who has never been here before, you know, would have experienced.
All right, dude, are you ready to hit your million-dollar list here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I am like really excited for this first one. You have written down conspiracy theories involving government, police, and manufactured crises. And then you also had, will the pendulum swing back? But I want to start with that first part. Conspiracy theories, government, police, and manufactured crises. What do you have to say about that?
So My big conspiracy theory, the one that I have, kind of, gone on about basically since 2020 is the, and I know I'm probably giving our federal and state governments, a lot of credit here. But, my theory is that, everything that we have experienced, probably even going back since, was it Ferguson, is that this is all, that we're experiencing a lot of manufactured crises in order to, turn public opinion against the police so that the police stop doing their jobs and then things get really bad. Things get really bad, and then all of a sudden the public starts demanding police again, and all of a sudden they're willing to sign off on, government kind of, doing anything and everything it takes to, to get society under control. And now we have a more authoritarian police state than we had before. Sounds crazy. It's probably, it is really far-fetched. And again, it's giving, government, a lot of our governments, a lot of credit, especially, working in government and kind of seeing how inept, government can be. But we all know that, that our politicians would love to have more control. So,
no, go ahead. Go ahead and finish. I'll give you my thoughts.
With the pendulum swinging back, I feel like we're already starting to see, the pendulum swinging back in terms of, public opinion being, more favorable towards the police, as we see, as we've seen our crime rates, risen, and people are saying, well, where's the police? We want the police back. But it feels a little bit manufactured.
So I just came up with this right now, and we're going to have to kind of play with this. I don't know how accurate this is going to be, but I thought for a long time that by the way, we're going to have to circle back to my idea. I'm still formulating it, but I thought for a long time that this stuff that was going on 4 years ago was because at some point, and I'm not saying, like, people say the whole George Floyd thing was like made up. No, it fucking happened, right?
Oh, for sure.
I think all the right things happened at the same time. It was a perfect storm, right? The COVID stuff, like, I'm not going to buy into the, I haven't bought into, like, COVID was manufactured purposely. I just don't think so. I think it was just mismanaged by the government because nobody fucking knew what was going on. I mean, I know people love Trump. Trump was cool with the, the shutdowns and all that stuff when that was going on originally, right? No one fucking knew what was going on. People fucked up, and because people are fucking bad, the government, they took, I feel like sometimes people in positions of power think they need to protect us from ourselves, which, let's be honest, there are some people that need protected from themselves, but they tried absolutely. To do that. They tried to do that. Yeah. And when I say that, I mean, like, fucking, like, not, I'm not trying to be derogatory, but the original reason we had fucking, like, some of these, programs to help people that really couldn't help themselves, not like to be the government's tit, like people that are fucking their IDD, all that kind of stuff, right? People that just can't yeah. function, right? There's people that do need help, right? And as a good society, we should help them, not not because you're too fucking lazy to get a fucking job, or because you had a fucking, you have a fucking, I don't know, your fucking toes hurts and you can't get a job. You got, you know who I'm fucking talking about. The people that will find any fucking reason to be on disability, whatever. We're not talking about those fucks, but sorry, I'm getting away from my train of thought. I just think it was all just, that whole thing was fucked up, right? So I don't really, I buy into that. But the George Floyd thing was perfect. No, yeah. Go ahead.
I feel like I need to clarify a little bit. And when I say manufactured crises, I don't necessarily mean, you know, that the events themselves were made up, but that, you know, like you were saying, everything kind of hit, you know, right at the same time. And you have, you know, certain actors, you know, both in and outside of government that were all too willing to, you know, to take advantage of that and to kind of,
that was my next point.
And to kind of push it until things are just wildly out of control.
Yeah. They're trying to, they see a situation. And when I say I would generally say the government, certain people in the government, not the whole government,
right?
Or the media is being told by certain members of the government, like, hey, let fucking make this a thing. I think people take advantage of shit, right? And I think they sometimes try to get stuff to happen off of nothing burgers, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, right? But I thought for a while, though, with how policing was going, that I was kind of on the same page with you a little bit, is they wanted a federalized police force, which I don't like the idea of it. I like the local control over law enforcement. That it does have an ugly side, unfortunately. Like, we see some departments that are struggling because they can't pay people and they struggle with training and manpower and stuff like that. So that's something that needs to be worked out. I don't think we should be like Australia and France and the UK, where it's basically a federal police force or a more of a state police. I don't like that idea. I don't know if I don't like that idea because I just don't want anything to do with Europe. I don't know. But that was the way I thought that was going to go. I've kind of come off of that a little bit. I think that was a little just more anger on my part about everything that was going on. But I think that it would have been pushed farther already because things have gotten bad, but I feel like things are starting to maybe settle and we're kind of figuring out. I don't know if we're just waiting. I mean, here's my conspiracy brain. Are we just waiting for the next big thing to happen pre-election? Like, is something going to go off the summer that's, you know, going to be the next thing and why we're, you know, burning down cities and shit? I don't know. I think suspicious things happen all the time. I think shit happens all the time. And when the timing is convenient, the news will pick it up and to make it into a thing. Like, I know there's certain people, I don't know if I'm this far into it, that believe the CIA runs the country, right? And the CIA tells the media what to do and all. I don't know. Maybe. But this is the analogy that I kind of teased before. Government's people, right? People suck. There's good people in government. Like, it's like a police department, right? It's like a patrol shift, right? I worked at a bigger agency, so like there was a lot of different personalities on patrol, right? You had guys like me, you had hard chargers, you had lazy pieces of shit, you had the whole gamut, right? And then within a police department, you had people that wanted, you know, some people get a little bit of power and they just fucking run with it, right?
Yeah.
Government's the same way. Either elected or appointed people or just people that work for the government that somehow have power. You have all those same types of personalities. I don't think the government's very cohesive at all. I think the government is like a fucking patrol shift. Like, you have decent, hard working Americans that want things good for the people of this country within the government. But then you have people that they think they know best. And so they're going to try and do things because they think they know best. And sometimes you just have fucking shitty people that do shitty things because they're shitty people. And so I think the government is just people and people suck. And so unfortunately you have a, it's all, I'm this is kind of incoherent, but I think you guys know what I'm saying. Like, I think it's just a mixed bag when it comes to the government. Like, you have, there's so many conspiracy theories right now. Like the 9/11 thing's big right now. I don't know why that's big right now. I, you know, people still think it didn't happen, or they weren't, you know, the planes were empty, or the whatever was in the towers caused them to come down. And like everything's a fucking conspiracy. The only one that I'm like kind of weird about is the Vegas shooter thing. Cause that was, to me, wasn't really explained, but I don't know.
And nobody has, you know, and just beyond not being explained, nobody's demanding an explanation for it.
They are on YouTube comments and on Instagram comments. Yes. That's where there's the demand.
Very true. Do you follow Grantham at all on Instagram?
I don't know who that is.
No. No, okay. So he's a gun tuber personality, but there was a recent video in which one of his friends, you know, is holding up an M240 Bravo, 7.62 belt fed machine gun, you know, and he's holding it up. He's like, I haven't held one of these since Vegas. Yeah. So you mentioned 9/11, and I think 9/11 is kind of a perfect example of, you know, kind of this idea of, you know, conspiracy theories and the government taking advantage of, you know, a crisis, where, you know, after that happened, you know, I mean, the American people we were basically, you know, convinced into, you know, there is an Al Qaeda terrorist hiding behind every corner, right? And, you know, when's the next terrorist attack going to happen? And, you know, in the midst of that, our government, a Republican controlled government at that, passed the Patriot Act, you know, which, you know, a lot of people argue, you know, violates our Fourth Amendment rights. By its very nature. And, you know, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the Patriot Act has ever been, you know, repealed or even walked back in any, you know, sort of significant way. You know, and so it's that kind of thing where, you know, the American people were like, whatever it takes to deal with a terrorist threat. Right. And I'm sure that there were people at the time that said, whoa, like, hold up. Let's, like, we got to think about this for a second. But enough people said, nope, we're going to do it. And then it wasn't until years later that, you know, people started to realize our federal government is, you know, has, you know, basically this, you know, carte blanche, you know, ability to, you know, spy on Americans under the excuse that they're, you know, looking for terrorists. So, you know, that I guess that's kind of where I'm going with that, is that they're taking advantage in order to get certain crises to get the American people to say, whatever it takes, you know, whatever it takes to get this shit under control.
And just to clarify one of my prior comments, like the Vegas thing, I'm not saying anything hinky happened. Well, I mean, obviously something obviously very bad happened. I'm not saying that it wasn't just that dude. I don't know. Like, I'm not the dude. Like, I don't spend hours watching YouTube videos. And here's the thing with, like, kind of going the conspiracies and demanding answers. Like, I live in my bubble and I'm like, huh, that seems weird, but I don't, you know, I haven't spent the time to research that to say, well, this is fucked up or this isn't fucked up. But just from my viewpoint, it's like, damn, I mean, that seems, some of this stuff kind of seems a little unexplained. It could be just as they said, right? I'm not saying it isn't, but I'm just saying, like, I I don't feel satisfied with it, but a lot of people don't either. And that's just the thing with some of these conspiracy things. And I would say the conspiracy thing lately, everything has become a conspiracy. Like everything.
For sure.
And it's getting fucking old, dude. Like it's fucking getting old. I'm just like, you get on the internet. I got to be honest. These days, I do what I got to do on the internet. I go searching for good formats to make you guys the fucking memes. I post on Instagram. I'm not perfect. Like I'll occasionally be like, oh my God, I've been looking at reels for 45 minutes. What the fuck just happened? But I just really try to stay off and I try to stay out of comment sections and it's just fucking horrendous. Just everything's a conspiracy. People are just so shitty. Like the internet was supposed to be this fucking glorious thing and it's absolutely disgusting.
You know, and I don't live my life by, you know, by these conspiracy theories. It's just a, you know, it's, I don't know. I just think it's interesting to talk about and that, you know, you kind of start to pick up on, you know, these things that just don't make a whole lot of sense, you know, in our lives, you know, in the world. And, you know, it's hard not to, you know, say, you know, to think, oh, well, maybe there is a, you know, a conspiracy, you know, going on there.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back to the podcast. Attention all law enforcement officers. Looking for a badge as flexible and resilient as you are? Discover Flex Shield by Ghost Patch. Our Flex Shields are not just generic badges. They're custom-made, flexible, metallic emblems designed to replicate your actual badge. Perfect for outer carriers, they come with a durable Velcro backing, making them easy to attach and keep them secure. Looking for a distinguished wallet badge? Flex Shield fits the bill. Why choose Flex Shield? We offer unmatched quality at nearly half the price of our competitors, and we never charge for mold or setup fees. Plus, we're the only ones offering true dual plating, a testament to our commitment to excellence. Proudly law enforcement owned and operated, we understand what it means to wear a badge. Start your custom order today at ghostpatchcustom.com. Flex Shield, the badge of the future. The next thing on your list is the futility of enforcing laws that have no teeth to them and writing tickets to people who should get them but won't learn versus giving warnings to people who shouldn't get them but will learn. What are your thoughts on all that?
So here, there's a large portion of the population that a large portion of the driving population that do not have valid licenses, whether they just don't have a license at all, or they have a revoked license or suspended license or, you know, or what have you. And, you know, I stop a lot of cars. I'm a pretty proactive guy. And I kind of came to the conclusion, you know, good or bad, I guess, but, you know, what's the point of writing a traffic ticket? You know, I can't arrest someone for driving revoked. I know that's a thing in a lot of other places, but I can't arrest someone and take them to jail for driving with a revoked license, even though it's a misdemeanor. I can only give them a ticket. I could maybe tow their car, although in the city I work for, we don't tow. We basically say, you know, here's your ticket, you know, don't drive, and then we leave and, you know, hope they don't drive away while we're still watching. But you know, what's the point of giving a ticket to someone who's just going to continue doing the same thing anyway? They're not going to change their behavior. And I can understand, you know, they got places to be, they got things to do. A lot of them probably have jobs that they're, you know, that they're working hard and they're just trying to stay, above water. But you know, and as far as, you know, writing the tickets, you know, again, that kind of goes along with writing the tickets to people who should get them but won't learn. Like there's a lot of bad drivers out there, and they, if whether I give them a ticket or not, they are going to continue to be a bad driver. But then we get, every once in a while, I'll stop someone who, probably should get a ticket, who's driving, 15 or 20 miles over the speed limit, for example. And they really shouldn't be doing that. I mean, that's anywhere you go, that's just kind of an unacceptable, amount over the speed limit. But me just stopping them is probably enough for them to at least, temporarily change their driving behavior, and if I'm not giving a ticket to someone else, I probably shouldn't be giving them a ticket either. Even though they're the ones that probably will learn from getting a ticket, and they're the ones that probably most likely are supportive of us in the job that we're doing. So why am I gonna go and turn their opinion against us? Does that make sense?
Oh no, we're on the same page. Now I will say about like turning the opinion against us, I think there's a certain level of like, hey, you need a fucking ticket. I will say, so in Colorado, it was fucking difficult, I thought, to lose your license. Like you had to fucking try. And you had to fucking try to get what the fuck did they call it? Habitual traffic offender. You had to fucking try. And it got to the point, like when I first started, you didn't have a driver's license. We are gonna tow your shit. Fuck you. And that changed over time where we towed so many fucking cars. We got so many fucking people off the road that shouldn't be on the road because they had to go get their fucking car. We could tow for no registration or bad registration. We could tow for no driver's license. And guys usually had a rule if that was like 2 out of 3, right? Like if you didn't have insurance and a driver's license or whatever, right? Out of those three, yep, guys, that was generally the general rule. It's like, all right, we're towing your shit. Mm-hmm. We got away from it. They didn't want us towing people's cars anymore. You drive around on a revoked license, whatever, here's your ticket. Because part of that was being busy, but the other part is nobody cares, right? Like, okay, you got revoked. Now, HTO, we would generally take people to jail for that.
Sorry, what's HTO?
Habitual traffic offender.
Oh, okay, okay.
But that got to the point towards the end where it didn't even feel like they really wanted you taking the people to jail for that. I will tell you, out here where I am in Iowa, they do the crime reports on the fucking radio, and I fucking love it. And you fucking drive on a barred license in Iowa, your ass is going to jail. Eat shit. You're going to go to fucking jail. And
everyone's going to know about it.
And everyone's going to fucking know about it. And my Colorado brain is like, man, that's pretty hardcore. And then my Iowa brain's like, don't fucking drive on a fucking revoked license, dude. But you're right in the sense that a lot of these revoked drivers, they still got places to go. They got to go to work. They're going to keep driving. It's just a matter of not being caught, which is this philosophical question, right? Like, do you prevent somebody from going to work? That's tough. That's tough. I don't know what the right answer is as far as how do we, because I get it, dude. You get a fucking DUI, that's a big fucking deal. You shouldn't have a driver's license, but does the DUI mean, all right, hey, sorry, you can't work anymore? That's fucked up. Is it? I mean, when you think about it like that, and maybe I'm just being a fucking softy here. I don't know. You guys tell me, but I don't know what the right answer is, right? Like, people should be fucking punished for it. We used to have these things. I don't know if you knew about this or not. Jails. We used to put fucking people in jail. I heard we still have them. They're out there somewhere.
They are.
We don't really use them anymore.
I was just there last night.
Okay. So they're there. Okay.
they are there.
We don't fucking use them. You know, I don't know. I might, if I remember this, I might bring this up to my dad and see what he thinks about that. I think he's coming out in May, which, by the way, it's May when this podcast comes out. So hopefully we'll have another podcast with my dad in the near future. Actually, where we're talking about the future. Dude, I always tell myself, like, hey, this is only going to be a two-hour podcast. We're like, this is going to be a fucking three-hour podcast. Fuck you. But that's okay. We're getting some good shit out. But the next one, I could be wrong, might be the PMPM meetup with Saul and Tony and Riley and Toby. I think. Could be. Not sure. That'll be exciting.
Those are some of my favorite podcasts is when you have the crew together.
It's great. But to get back on track with the driver's license thing, I mean, me personally, like, yeah, dude, you get a DUI, you probably, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, fuck you. You don't have a driver's license, but it's like, okay, well, we want this person to be, we have a problem with people not being productive members of society. Now, I understand if you go to jail, you're probably going to lose your job. Here's what I would say, right? You get a fucking deuce, you do a fucking month, but we don't take your driver's license away because you got to fucking drive to work. Like, how the fuck can you get to work? Now, I say that with a grain of salt. In the city, you got options. You got bus, you got train, you got Ubers. Where I'm at right here in the country, you do not have options. I mean, I suppose you could have a buddy pick you up. I mean, I guess maybe that's part of it, right? Is an inconvenience. Like, fuck you for having a DUI. You're inconvenienced. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is to that. We're just kind of spitballing here. But I definitely hear what you're saying. My whole thing on traffic enforcement, where I'm at with it and in my opinions on it after my policing career, is I think traffic enforcement is a good thing, right? Like, people always bring up this fucking pretext stop shit. Oh, you only stopped me because you thought I was doing dope. Guess what? We couldn't stop you if you weren't doing another, if you weren't committing a traffic violation. Don't commit a traffic violation. You won't get fucking stopped. Eat my ass. So the pretext stop conversation, I think, is just fucking retarded. But my thing on traffic, like, look, you're speeding, you have a potential to get in stop. Like, I speed a little bit. I try to keep it within reason, but I'm, you know, if the speed limit's 55, you're going 56, you could get pulled over. That's the way the cookie crumbles. It's chicken shit, sure, but it's a traffic violation. It 1 to 100 over is, it's all a violation, right? But if you stop somebody and there's nothing going on in the car and you can have a reasonable conversation with them and feel like that they're going to slow the fuck down or whatever, there's no fucking reason to write them a ticket. I'm sorry. I like, if you fucking like get off fining people money to pay the government when we pay so much already, you fucking suck. Now, if they need a ticket because you don't feel like they're going to understand, like, hey, we need, look, traffic is important. A lot of people die on the roads, right? If it's beyond wreck, like if it's just fucking totally reckless, absolutely write them a ticket. But for chicken shit stuff, like, I know as a young cop, I wrote chicken shit stuff because I thought that was what I was supposed to do. And now that time has gone on, I don't like it. And I hate myself for that. But I did. They're all good tickets, right? I mean, they're all violations. But if you can have a conversation with somebody and get them to slow down and you think it's going to work and it's not reckless, there's no need to write people tickets. That's I'm not telling you how to think. Anybody out there, that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure go into this, you know, in this next thing, but you know, one of the reasons I do a lot of traffic stops is, you know, not because I'm looking to you know, not because I'm looking to hammer someone, you know, write them a ticket for some chicken shit, you know, violation. It's because I am looking for something, you know, I am looking for some, you know, bigger, thing going on, you know, whether it is a DWI or, you know, it's a warrant or, you know, they got dope or guns, you know, in the vehicle. Like that's the real stuff that, you know, is
that's a pretext, you know,
I think is going to make, you know, I think is going to make a difference. You know, if I stop, you know, someone who's driving drunk, I think I've potentially saved someone's life, you know, whether it's, you know, preventing them from, you know, crashing into someone else and killing them or crashing and killing themselves, maybe, you know, or, you know, preventing someone from, you know, going and committing another crime or harming someone else. You know, that's what I want to do. That's why I want to stop vehicles. So I, you know, I, last year, I'd have to look at it again, but I could probably count, you know, I think I did last year, I think I stopped, you know, probably like 600 cars, you know, over the course of the year. And that probably isn't a lot to some people. It probably is, you know, that's probably more cars than they've stopped in their entire career, but I could probably count the number of traffic tickets I wrote on two hands, you know, out of 600 stops.
That's legit.
So, well, the next, you know, we write tickets for, you know, for other stuff too. Like, you know, if it's a misdemeanor DWI, we have to write a citation for that. So I don't count that, but, you know, just like a speeding ticket or like a distracted driving ticket, you know, I don't write very many of those.
The next thing you had on your list was DUIs. And from what you said that that you like DUIs, often a simple and straightforward process, but the whole process feels a little bit manufactured for the money aspect. And I still encourage people to contact a lawyer if they have questions. Before you get into that, did you hear the Blue Falcon Court, which is a little while ago, where I made the case that I thought SFSTs were fucking retarded?
So that's kind of where this is coming from.
Okay.
You know, if I can articulate that someone is impaired, you know, like I shouldn't have to do SFSTs when I'm looking at a guy who's, you know, can barely keep his eyes open. He's fallen over drunk. He can't find his driver's license. He can't, you know, his speech is so slurred. You know, why should I have to do SFSTs? And I know that I don't, but, you know, the prosecutors, the defense attorneys, they all want to see that, you know, and if that doesn't happen, the whole thing's going to come into question, you know, and so, you know, so I wholeheartedly agree with you there. And, you know, I think I should just be able to go straight to, hey, you know, blow into this PBT for me. You know, let's just make sure you're not over 0.08, you know, and just make it a lot simpler, you know, and I work on the freeways a lot. You know, I'm a city cop, but I do like to get out on the freeways, and sometimes it's a little bit nerve wracking, you know, when there's heavy traffic, out there and being on the side of the road, and, you know, and I want to get out of there as soon as possible. You know, but we are basically forced into, you know, having to do these SFSTs and this whole process, you know, just to get this DWI arrest.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. We all know my thoughts on it. I think it's pretty silly. If you haven't heard it, you should go back and track down
the, oh, 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 I
the
have.
the Blue Falcon one. Well, I'm saying the people, if I happen to catch a new listener or something, the Blue Falcon one, I kind of lose my mind on that one, because I just think that we have such a crazy system for doing these DUIs, and I just think it's so stupid. I think doing the hokey pokey on the side of the road is dangerous, and I think there's better ways to do this, in my humble opinion.
You know, but even if it does, you know, even if it is, you know, kind of does seem like it's all, you know, for the lawyers and making the lawyers money. You know, I can appreciate, you know, people being able to exercise, you know, exercise their rights, you know, and so I would love it if every person said, yep, I want to talk to a lawyer, just so, you know, just so they can understand, you know, what they have a right to. And, you know, we're supposed to, you know, when we do our DWIs, we're also supposed to, you know, ask them some more questions, but we have to Mirandize them. And sometimes I just want to, you know, as I'm like reading the Miranda, I just want to like shake my head and be like, say no, like don't, you know, just exercise your rights, you know, sit there, you know, sit down and shut up.
I'm kind of an asshole, dude. I think Miranda is bad case law.
How so?
I really do. I think the fact, like, okay. And I have a little drinky poo in me. So maybe I'm going to sound like a dick here, and maybe I'm fucking off base. I'm not for violating people's rights, okay? I'm not advocating that at all. But Miranda basically explains to people, you have the right to remain silent. That's it, right? Like, I mean, obviously, you know, the right to attorney and all that stuff, right? We don't explain any other process, right? You know, ignorance of the law is not a valid excuse in court, right? Like, if you pull somebody over for some obscure traffic violation and they say, I didn't realize that was a violation, whether you could still write them a ticket. The ignorance of the law is doesn't get you out of shit.
Yeah.
So why does ignorance of the law protect you in this aspect? You should fucking, like, as an American citizen, I feel like that's basic fucking knowledge that you do not have to talk to the cops. You do not have to do any of that shit, and you can request a lawyer. That's basic common knowledge, and I think that's been that way for a long time. I think Miranda's shit. Maybe I'm just an asshole.
Well, here's the thing, though, is I think that if Miranda never happened, you know, we probably wouldn't have that widespread knowledge of you know, of those rights. I'm not saying that, you know, it should have taken Miranda, you know, for people to understand their rights. We should have understood them already, right? You know, we should have, our schools should have taught us, you know, what our laws, you know, are there for, and what, you know, but, you know, over time they do that less and less, and, you know, we're learning our rights because, you know, some big case law happened and it hits the news, you know, or it's on a TV show.
Favorite patrol music is the next thing you have on the list. Enlighten us, young man.
So I guess this was more a question for you. I don't necessarily have, you know, a specific, you know, type of music that I listen to every time. You know, it kind of depends on the night. I will say I won't listen to new country, quote unquote, gross country. I don't listen to current music, really at all. You know, if I'm my go-to radio stations for patrol would be, so we have kind of a, I don't know if you could call it an old timey kind of country station, because they have, I mean, they have some, you know, newer stuff. I don't, I think their most like current stuff is probably like 15 years old. You know, but they play a lot of, you know, George Strait and Alan Jackson and Toby Keith and, sorry, you know, you know, plenty of other artists that I can't, you know, I can't think of off the top of my head right now. I, you know, and I listen to, you know, like the classic rock stations. And if I'm feeling, you know, a little spicy, I might pull up Spotify and, you know, play like some NWA and Public Enemy and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, there are some nights that I also put on the Christian radio station. And I'll listen to that while I'm driving around. I can't listen to podcasts. I feel like, you know, I feel like I want to listen too much to the podcast and, you know, take in what's being said. And it takes away my focus from, you know, being aware of my surroundings and stuff like that. But, you know, for you, what, you know, when you were driving around, what did you typically listen to?
So I can kind of break this down into eras mostly.
Okay.
First and foremost, all of you should be listening to this fucking podcast. Just kidding. I know people that do, and I think you should, but be careful. Like, if you're about to fucking stop a car or something, maybe hit pause. So we're not talking about, that's, you know,
that's the other thing. You know, like, I'm like trying to have to hit the pause. And,
yeah. Well, so my eras, so when I first started on Graveyard Shift, really my first couple of years, I feel like I listened to a lot. Like, we had working in Colorado. How about that? working in Colorado, I you had some main rock stations, right? You had KBBI, you had the Fox, and you had 93.3, and there was like the weird, there's another like 90, I don't know, KBCO, or I don't remember. That one was not really, I don't really listen to that one a whole lot. It was like 95.7 or 97 something. I don't remember. But those were like my main three. And if the Rockies were playing, the Broncos were playing. Broncos were playing pre-fucking wildness, I'd fucking listen to those games when I was working. I remember very vividly driving around, listening to a Broncos game. And this was like after, I guess it was maybe after Ferguson. I don't remember. But it might have been Ferguson. I don't quite recall, but it was Ferguson or George. I don't fucking remember. Listening, and the announcer was like, oh, they're all fucking kneeling. And I was like, fuck these people. And I didn't pay attention for years after that. But that was kind of my main thing. I didn't have, a lot of the cars I was in didn't have Bluetooth the first 3-4 years. Some people like really like the Bluetooth and, you know, would play their own music. The old timers, I would frequently hear classical music on the radio. Like when they keyed up, you could hear classical music in the background.
Interesting.
And I asked them about it and they say, well, here's the thing. It keeps your mood more mellow, right? We're like, and I know this, I don't know if you've ever done this, but like I would go play hockey, right? Mm-hmm. And I had like a fucking, like, this is how old this is, I didn't have Bluetooth in my car, and I'd burn CDs to listen to pump me up before I got to hockey. Okay. And I feel like I'd wore myself out before I got to hockey, like getting into it, you know.
Yeah.
So I get that, right? Like, you don't want to be so, like, you know, like I'm really into like the heavier bands now, or getting more into them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something I'd want to listen to at work because it'd get me all fucking mad, right? So I tried, I was like, oh, that makes sense. So after that, I stayed a little more classic rock because there's not many classic rock songs that like really get me like going wild, you know? But then my last couple of years, a lot of country. A lot of country on day shift. Because I had a partner that liked country music, and I was like, all right, I'll listen to country music. Because I grew up listening to country music. And obviously things have changed a little bit. There's some good people making country music these days, but not... wasn't like it. It ain't like how it used to be, you know. You don't have the Alan and George, and although Garth, God, Garth made some good music, but he is such a douche, big douche. So yeah, that was my patrol music.
I'd never thought about it that way, but. You know, when you mention like listening to the mellower music when you're driving around, I feel like that's something I, you know, kind of subconsciously started to take note of, you know, which is why I, you know, typically listen to, why lately I've really started to listen more, you know, to more of that, you know, kind of classic country or even the, like the Christian radio stations. It's not going to get you all wore out. It kind of relaxes you a little bit, and not to the point where you're, you know, so complacent, but yeah, it's just, you know, it's good driving around music.
The next thing on your list, you know, it's probably going to happen, but tell me about BJJ and the benefits beyond just learning a skill for the job.
So, you know, everybody that talks about, you know, every cop that, you know, does BJJ is like, you got to do BJJ. It's, you know, you got to do it, so you can learn to fight on the job. Right. And I think at one point I absolutely would have been there. And I still talk about that, you know, with people that I talk about, you know, doing jiu-jitsu, like, you know, it's good to know those skills for the job. Right. As with, you know, any other exercise, you know, you have that, you know, physical health aspect of it. You know, it's a lot of cardio in a different form than, you know, your typical, you know, running or biking or rowing. You know, there's a mental health aspect to it, you know, as well, you know, going with, you know, having that physical exertion. But there's also the, you know, the aspect of being in close contact with someone, and it's rather intimate. I mean, you are getting intimately close, you know, with another human being. But all jokes aside, I mean, that's good for your mental health. You know, having that, you could probably just keep playing that for the rest of the episode. What are you gay?
What are you gay? Who said I'm gay? You are gay. classic.
But, you know, with all that, I mean, you know, then you have the dual purpose of you're learning a skill for the job. So that's all I have to say about that.
Well, that's all I got to say about that. You know, here's the thing, and I'll say it before, or I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think anything that is helpful in a skill for the job is great. Like BJJ grappling is good. Like, I don't care what kind of martial art it is. I think it would be very helpful in law enforcement. Great. I think it's good. And honestly, there is an aspect of like getting outside of the house and doing things with other adults. Hold on a second. But gay. I think it's great. I think it's great. But the BJJ crowd just makes it so easy. And like I have like great examples of it, right? The thing in Memphis, where the fucking goons beat the shit out of the guy. I had a comment, or I read a comment somewhere, where somebody was like, man, if those guys did BJJ, that wouldn't have happened. It's like, no, those guys were total pieces of shit. Okay. BJJ wasn't going to save them. Like, you know, like,
no, they wanted to do that to someone.
Yes.
No, no amount of jujitsu would have stopped that.
Yeah. I mean, that could have made it worse. Honestly,
I suppose I could have.
Yeah. Those dudes were fucking, they're bad human beings, right? But like they put BJJ up on the pedestal. I mean, like I had a podcast with a dude who I think highly of, right? This guy was on the podcast, and it was a hell of a podcast, but he kind of surprised me a little bit. If you guys heard it, where he was talking about like, well, I don't really carry off duty, and he kind of referenced BJJ. Yeah. And I was like, what the fucking cinnamon toast fuck? That's wild to me, right? And so this is the analogy I've always used, and I will continue to use, right? Now, I use this analogy knowing that I came around with this. When I was a kid, or in high school, is when Slipknot came out, right? And I didn't even fucking listen to Slipknot because of the kids that listen to Slipknot. These fucking kids are fucking weird as shit, and they are fucking stupid. And then I listened to Slipknot. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. They ruined it for me. And that's kind of how I feel like the BJJ crowd is. But I'm not.
Well, which
I definitely advocate anything. Like, I'll be honest with you. If there was something in my ballpark, like locally, I'd probably give it a shot. I think it'd be great. It'd be good for me. I'm not saying I'm opposed to doing it. Like, I'm good with the homoerotic shit. Like, it's fine. It's 2024. But it's not available here is kind of the thing, and I'm not going to drive to the nearest fucking big city to do it. I don't have the time to do that. My time at home is more important.
And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with, you know, with the whole Slipknot analogy, is that, you know, people get into, you know, jujitsu, and they're like, oh, you know, it's this great thing. And, you know, and they want they're so excited about it that they want to get everybody else into it, which is great. You know, but they're almost like trying to bully people into doing it. And, you know, and when I was new, I'll admit that I probably was there a time or two, you know, but now any sort of, you know, mention of jujitsu and like, hey, you do it is, or hey, you should do it, is, you know, more of like a playful, you know, bully, not like any serious, like, you know, oh, if you don't do this, you're gonna get killed on the streets, kind of thing.
Well, and along those lines, let's be honest, we all kind of do those things to an extent. Like,
it doesn't matter what your interest is.
Yeah, all of us do it. I mean, I fucking do that with fishing. I've gotten a little out of control. A little bit. The last thing on your list is guns. Tell us your thoughts.
So, like I mentioned before, you know, I I worked at a gun store, you know, for a number of years, and that's, you know, kind of, that's kind of the background I come from, you know, when it comes to, when it comes to like viewing, you know, constitutional rights and the exercise, you know, of those rights. I think it's given me a good framework for wanting to respect, for wanting to respect people's, you know, rights. And, but, you know, I would like to see, you know, I would love to see our, you know, our gun laws, or our, the, like the, our carry permit, you know, restrictions loosened. I think it would, I know some will disagree with me, but I think it would make things a lot simpler in terms of, you know, enforcement of the current gun laws that we have on the books. You know, if we were able to say, you know, if you can legally possess a gun, you can carry a gun. If you can't, you can't, you know, you can't have it, you can't have it. And, you know, that's kind of the end of it. You know, that being said, we just, I think it would also, you know, change things if we, you know, it was one less law that we would have to enforce into, you know, potentially, you know, in our dealings with someone who is an otherwise law-abiding citizen. And I know, I mean, like, if they're a law-abiding citizen, but they're carrying a gun without a permit, then are they really a law-abiding citizen? Yeah, there's that argument to be made, but I don't know. I would love to see constitutional carry in Minnesota and nationwide, you know, where it's you have the right to bear arms, and you should be able to do that without a permit. You know, going further. So, you know, I've been looking at my list too as we're, you know, going on here, you know, and I mentioned like a lack of enforcement of current laws, and it's just, we see it a lot, especially around here with, you know, just kind of this revolving door of these, you know, violent offenders who are caught with, you know, who are committing these violent crimes, and they're using guns, or they're carrying guns around as they're committing these crimes. And, you know, and they're just kicked out the door, their charges are reduced, their convictions are reduced. And it's like, you know, people keep wanting to, you know, pass more restrictive gun laws. And it's like, well, we already have all these gun laws on the books. Like, why aren't we holding people accountable to these laws that they're already violating? Like, why are we going to add more stuff to the books? Why can't we do the job with the stuff that, with the tools we already have available to us?
That's an argument the cop, or I feel like law enforcement folks in law enforcement always make. And so I got some stories based on this that I cooked up, but I was like thinking about these all day knowing this was going to come up. And I think you'll appreciate this. This is one of my favorite stories ever. Yeah, I love it. And I apologize. I'm fucking super forgetful. I don't fucking remember if I've told you guys this, but so in Colorado, you know, we passed all these restrictive gun laws. I can't remember what year it was, but it was still there. And it, you know, was it
post Sandy Hook?
I want to say I think it was post Sandy Hook. And you know, you know, there was magazine capacity laws and stuff like that. And, you know, background stuff had always kind of been on the books. And I gotta be honest, like, here's my thought on like the constitutional carry thing. Like, I'm good with it. Right. I agree. If if I ran across somebody, generally where I worked, if they had a gun on them, I might not know. Right? You don't know sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't always have a reason to pat somebody down. I think people conceal carry all the time and we don't know because they're not shitbags, right? Like, I think people exercise what should be their rights, but they're not shitbags. And so I think people go around all day long carrying guns and you never fucking know, right? You know, I'd have fucking people on traffic stops be like, hey, just so you know, I got a gun on my hip. I'm like, cool. As long as it stays in that holster, we're not going to have a problem. I don't give a shit. If, you know, I'm not going to check this dude to make sure his gun had the right capacity. And I know I realize in Colorado some grandfather stuff, but I don't fucking care. I think that's fucking ridiculous. Like, I always wondered that stuff. Like, who the fuck's going to ever look into this? Unless this person commits a crime with that gun, no one's ever going to fucking know. Like, who the fuck's going to look into magazine capacities? Who gives a fuck? It's they pass these laws that are really not enforceable, right? Unless you're going door to door fucking demanding to see people's weapons, it's not going to happen, right? They pass these laws for feel good things. And I mean, I suppose it restricts the people in the state can't buy those in stores anymore. But let's be fucking honest. There's so many guns out there. It's not going to make a dent, or people are going to go out of state to buy the gun, because people that like guns, they're going to do that because they're going to get what they want to get. They're not going to fucking be like, okay, I would be interested in Colorado if gun sales went down or not after that. But that's besides the point. I just, as a cop, I felt like the people that I'm worried about with guns, that's never changed, right? It's always people
right
on the street, you know, in bad areas of town, which we could have a conversation about. They may not be felons. They might just like fucking self-protection, right? Like, this is a fucking bad part of town, right? I got to be honest. Most of the times you take a gun off somebody, it's like, I don't know why. It's like a science equation. You take a gun off of somebody, they probably have a felony, right?
Yeah.
It's just a thing, right? It's a thing. Right. I don't know who's not aware of this, but inner city violence is kind of a problem. And it's maybe more of a problem than mass shootings, because it happens all the time. Mass shootings are obviously bad. That's something we got to figure out as a society. But these inner city shootings, you know, drug rips, fucking drive-bys and shit happens a lot more frequently. And we don't seem to be concerned about those. And I don't understand why. Because the perfect example you bring up, we call it possession of a weapon by a previous offender, POWPO. Those fucking people never got fucking jail time.
Nope.
Don't we care about this? Don't we care about gun violence? Apparently fucking not. My favorite one I ever had. I wish I could remember the background on how I got this gun off this dude. But the guy had a gun on him, and I arrested him for something else. And he had this gun, and I think it ended up being a POWPO because he had like a juvenile conviction for a felony or something. But the gun was stolen, and I asked him where he got the gun, right? And under Miranda, he told me, I bought it off the street from somebody for like a ridiculous amount of money. It was actually a nice gun. It was a Glock. He's like, yeah, I bought it at this street corner for $200. I fucking charged him for not getting a background check because I thought it was funny. That's the only time I'd ever fucking done that. And I ever fucking would, because I'm like, that shit's funny. And when they looked at it, you know, when I sent the affidavit up, they're like, really? And I was like, absolutely. Fuck this dude. He didn't get a fucking background check. Eat my ass. There's my story. But yeah, a lot of this stuff is like not enforceable. It's just like, hey, we're going to throw it on the books so we feel fucking good. Or you're right. We have POWPO. We have these fucking laws that we don't enforce. And I have theories why, but that's a story for another day. Do you have any more thoughts on that before we get into the dumb questions?
I mean, it's just the, the kind of the final thing I wrote was just, appreciation for, the good citizens who are carrying, if I do come across, someone who is carrying, and it's almost always someone who, just lets me know up front. I always try to thank them for, one, for letting me know, but, two, for actually exercising, their right to carry, because there, there's always this, this thing of like, oh, the cops just want to take our guns away, right? And I'm all for, as many people carrying as, legally, should be able to carry, right? And so, I always try to tell them, hey, I appreciate your right to carry, and I just want to say thank you for, for doing that. I'm, because I'd like to see more people, doing that. So, I think that's all I got.
It is that time. It's that time again for the dumb questions. I got a new one, right? It's a little different. I actually have a bunch of new ones because I'm ahead on podcasts. But this one might throw you off a little bit. I had a fine young man send me a fucking magic 8-ball. Did you have those in the Philippines?
A magic 8-ball.
You know what I'm talking about? The thing that gives you the answers to questions?
Oh, I was going to say, you don't mean the baggie of cocaine?
No, not one of those. The different
not one of
ones.
Those. Okay, all right. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if I ever remember having one in the Philippines, but I absolutely know what a magic 8-ball is.
Okay, I have one. You need to ask it a question.
I need to ask it a question.
Yes.
Oh, man. Have you installed your bidet yet?
You could have just asked me. You didn't have to ask a fucking 8-ball. But the 8-ball's on the ball with this because it says don't count on it. I haven't done it yet. Were you the one that sent it to me?
No.
Okay.
No, that's funny though. But how long has it been since you've had this? I think the 8-ball is accurate. That don't count on it because you've had it for months and months, and
I'm gonna
you still
do it.
Haven't installed it.
I haven't installed it. Maybe I got to get a new toilet seat next time I'm at Walmart. Maybe that'll be the time to do it.
Along with your oil change?
Fuck you. Actually, I fucking had to go to Walmart today because I fucking... Gosh darn it, I'm so pissed about it. I have had such bad luck with tires the last few years. Fucking destroyed a tire today. Of course, they don't have the same one. Now I'm fucking rolling around with mismatched tires. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. It's a pain in my dick. But I forgot to get a toilet seat. But I at least take the fucking tire off. So fuck you guys. I can change a tire. I can change my oil too, you fucktards. Fuck you all. Hey, buddy, what's your hobby? Obviously, we know mine is fishing and I have a little bit of a problem. What's yours? What do you do to blow off steam?
We've already mentioned guns, going to the gun range, BJJ. I do like to collect stuff. I like to collect patches here and there. I do some how was I gonna say?
By the way, I hit the hog A. Make sure you guys are sending me your patches, you fucking assholes.
I sent you one.
I know you did.
I kind of started to get back into collecting sports cards a little bit. I haven't collected sports cards in probably 10, 15 years or so. And but the dang Facebook feed, know, the algorithm just, I don't know, like, I don't know how it popped up, but all of a sudden these sports card like groups started popping up. I was like, ah, oh, man, like, I, you know, I kind of want to get back into that. So I've been getting back into that a little bit.
What is the best type of sauce?
Oh man, I love sauces.
Oh, you do?
I do. Yep.
I'm really milking the shit out of this.
I'll be honest. If I had to narrow it down to just one thing, I'd probably say barbecue sauce. You know, but like I got like a fridge and cupboard full of, you know, different sauce bottles. It drives my wife nuts. She's like, oh, you know, every time I go to the grocery store, she's like, oh, looks like you got no sauce, you know. I love ranch, you know, being from the Midwest, I love ranch, but being, you know, half Filipino, I also like I like a lot of Asian sauces too. You know, sweet chili sauce is a great go-to. In the Philippines, there's also like a lot of places they'll have like a spicy vinegar. You know, it's vinegar with like a bunch of like you know, chilies and like onions and garlic and stuff like that. I like to mix that with soy sauce too. So, but yeah, I love sauce. So
the problem,
put it on everything.
Yeah, the problem with sauce generally is most of it's bad for you, and that's really the downfall of it.
Oh, I was gonna say, you know, sometimes I do make my own stuff. Like I just learned how to make my own mayonnaise.
Recently. Oh, you mixed a batch?
It was actually very simple. So
thanks to all those who got that joke, by the way.
Yeah.
Would you do it again? If you had a time machine, would you have gotten into law enforcement, or you wish you would have done something else?
I absolutely would do it all over again. Would I do it here in Minnesota? That's a good question. But I absolutely would do it all over again.
What is the stupidest thing you ever did as a rookie?
Let's see. The stupidest thing I ever did as a rookie. This would have been, I think, just after I got off field training. We had a report of a stolen vehicle from a business. It was like a delivery van. And someone, while I was working, someone called the business and said, hey, I think your stolen van is over on, you know, this block on the other side of town. So he calls us and we're all, you know, hot to get this stolen vehicle, right? And I was the first on scene. And I did not bother to check the stolen vehicle description.
Minor details.
The vehicle was owned by the business. But it wasn't this, I want to say it was like a Sprinter van that had been stolen. And the vehicle that was reported on this block was a box truck. Minor details, I know. the business, you know, these delivery guys are sitting in this box truck as we're pulling up. And I, you know, initiate a felony stop, you know, pulling these guys out at gunpoint. And as we're in the middle of this felony stop, the owner The owner of the business comes driving up behind us in our squads, and he hops out and he's yelling, like, that's not the stolen vehicle. That's the wrong vehicle. And we're like, oh, shit. You know, and these are, you know, our guys, these delivery guys are just like, you know, in their early 20s probably, and, you know, making minimum wage and are getting guns pointed at them. I'm like, oh, man. Like, if I just bothered to check the description of the vehicle, I would have known right away, pulling up to it, that it was not the right vehicle.
This reminds me, there was a thing, I saw a couple videos, some reels on it. Did you see the one where they pulled over the wrong stolen ambulance? Like, it wasn't, like, somebody fucking stole an ambulance, and then they just pulled over a random ambulance, and it was a different one. It was a different ambulance.
Oh, yeah. Was that the one where the ambulance, where the actual stolen ambulance, like, ended up in the, like, in front of City Hall or in front of the police department or something?
I don't know where it ended up. I just remember, like, where they did the stop on the ambulance, and they're like, what?
Yeah, but yeah. Oh, I remember that. The guy, like, I want to say it was at, like, a gas, they were at, like, a gas station, and yeah, the guy was, like, had, like, some sort of mental health thing going on, and he, like, hops into the ambulance and drives away.
Classic comedy.
Yeah.
If you could go back and tell yourself a piece of advice when you're starting as a cop, what would old you tell young you?
Don't stop exercising and start jujitsu sooner.
Yay! Hold on,
that's
if we're gonna do this, we're gonna do this right. No, I mean, it's great advice, though.
Well, you know, it's advice that our instructors told us while we were still in school was, you know, like, you're getting this training now, don't quit, find a place to do, you know, to keep doing it. And I was like, that's bullshit. You know, like, we'll get the training we need at our police departments, right? And that's not the case.
No. Can you imagine a world if police departments train their dudes? It'd be great.
Well, now, so I'm now one of the DT instructors, and that's something that I would like to see, you know, change here in the future. You know, hoping to at least increase our training and, you know, get more high quality training. I know it's not going to be in the same, you know, the same level of, you know, that consistent, you know, training that, like, I would, you know, be doing, but it's better than, you know, doing a nominal 8 hours, you know, once a year.
Yep. What is the most embarrassing moment of your life?
Out of all the embarrassing moments in my life, man, I feel like I just am an embarrassing guy. This could also qualify as the stupidest thing I did as a rookie. I would say it was the, I was about two, I want to say like 2 weeks on, in the field training, and our locker rooms were under renovation at the time. So we didn't have any access to them. So we had to break. So all of our stuff, all of our uniforms, all of our gear, had to go home with us. So we'd have to get changed at home. We'd have to get undressed at home. And that included my sidearm, which I forgot one morning and went about 3 hours into the shift, 3 hours into the shift without noticing it. And what should maybe be even more embarrassing is the fact that my FTO didn't notice it either. for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Until I told him. I remember the look he gave me when I said, I forgot my gun at home. So I had to drive home and grab my gun and drive back and just, like praying the whole time, like, oh man, I hope I don't get fired.
I gotta tell you, you're not, I don't think I ever forgot my gun. I forgot magazines. That shit happens though. Maybe I did. But I realized it early. I don't remember. But I'll tell you what, man, there's times where that shit has happened. Like dudes are like, it was always in briefing when they realized it though. They didn't make it out on patrol. Like, oh shit, I gotta go home. But in the academy, we were in uniforms and somebody fucking forgot their gun. And so somebody gave them like their backup gun and put it in the holster. And we got through the day without getting smoked. Nobody noticed.
In honor of that, I did have to go and buy the ghost patch, forgot gun.
Yep.
Achievement patch.
There's a friendly reminder. Go buy some achievement patches.
Yeah.
Do you have a good on-duty dildo story?
I only have one good one, and it was also while I was in field training. We were executing a search warrant on a house for a guy that had I want to say killed someone using like a date rape drug or something like that. And I don't think it was intentional. It was just like an overdose of the drug. So we get into this guy's house and we're searching and we go into his bedroom and he's got like all these like sex masks up and we start going, we start searching around and we're like, this guy's obviously kind of like a sexual deviant, but the first drawer I opened, there was just this massive, 12 or 14 inch black dildo that looked like it was the size of my forearm. and I shut it and kept moving on. And I don't remember, which partner it was, but someone asked me like, hey, have you searched this desk yet? And I, knowing I already had, I was like, no, I haven't looked in it yet. He opens up opens up that first drawer and there's that massive, dildo.
Nice.
And I think everybody who was on the search warrant got hit with that thing. Not literally, but everybody just kept kind of passing on the responsibility of searching that desk to the next person, so that everybody got to experience it.
Do you have a favorite dead guy call?
Yeah, it was my first traffic fatality, and fortunately it was on the freeway. So our state patrol partners handled it, but I was the first one on scene, and it was this guy who was riding his motorcycle, and he came to this curve in the freeway, and he didn't navigate the curve appropriately, went off the road, hit a chain link fence, 75 feet off the road, but he's going about 100 miles an hour according to witnesses. So he hit, so I get there and I find this guy in what looks like a, like kind of like an upright kneeling position, but he's facing the fence and there's all this brush along the fence, so I can't see, and his head is down, kind of like he's almost in like a praying position.
Okay.
And so I couldn't see his face or the top of his head, right? I could only see the back. I could only see his back and the back of his head. And he had, kind of longer hair. And so I check, I get up there. I check him. I don't see like any chest rise. I don't see, I check his pulse. I don't see any pulse, or I don't feel any pulse. So I air up to dispatch, that I'm going to start, he's not breathing. He doesn't have a pulse. I'm going to start CPR. And I pull him back, to lay him flat on the ground, and his head kind of flips back. And as his head is flipping back, I see the top of his head, and it's just cracked open. And you could see like brain matter through the cracked skull. I'm like, nope, this dude is gone. So, it went from starting CPR to not starting CPR. This guy's DOA.
He gone.
He was gone. And so we're like, with all this brush, we're like, man, where did this dude's motorcycle go? Because we're trying to identify this guy, and yeah, he doesn't have like any identification on him. So we're like trying to find the bike to see if we can identify him on the plate. So we're looking for the bike, and this dude's bike was like, this is how fast this guy was going. This guy's bike was like 100 yards past where he was, down in a ravine or kind of like a ditch. Like he hit the fence and his bike just kept going. That's how fast this guy was riding. And
by the way, I would have wrote him a ticket for speed, just so you know. Not everybody gets away with it.
There was some alcohol involved, so I probably would have arrested him for DWI. So
what's the proudest moment of your career?
The proudest moment of my career. So I received a life-saving award for actually doing CPR on a guy who I did it by myself because I was on day shift and my day shift partner forgot to turn his radio on.
Minor detail.
So, as I'm like running code, dispatch is still trying to call out, to my partner, keeps airing his number. And, even as I'm like running into the building, the dispatcher's trying to call him out and, not getting any answer. And, so I actually, the guy recovered a pulse and normal breathing just off of compressions before anybody else got there, which is wild. Like this guy, he didn't come to, but as soon as he started breathing on his own, I was like, that's not supposed to happen. I got back to the office and, my partner's like, oh, hey, how's it going? Is he eating lunch? I'm like, oh, I was just doing CPR. And he was like, what? I didn't hear that. I'm like, you were looking at our CAD screen up in the office and, paying attention. But anyway, so I got a life-saving award for that. But for the longest time, I didn't know, like what this guy's quality of life was, or whether I had, actually like saved his life. Cause when I called the ER to follow up, they kind of treated it, or the way the doctor was like answering questions, it was almost like I shouldn't have been doing CPR on him. And so I felt really bad about it for the longest time until I actually got the award and the guy was there and he was like, expressed his appreciation for that incident. So that was pretty good moment there.
Do you have any ghost or alien stories?
I do not. That's not to say I don't believe in like ghosts or spirits. I do. But not in, I don't know, I guess not in a way that, you know, most people would, you know, think of like experiencing, you know, ghosts or the paranormal. As far as aliens, it's a big, big universe. And to say that we're the only ones out there, it feels like a really big stretch. So I don't know that I necessarily believe in aliens, but I guess I don't know that I'd be surprised if the aliens were out there.
Good sir, in your humble opinion, what is the best patrol car of all time?
V6 Explorer.
Excuse me?
Just kidding.
Shut your mouth.
You know, being that I've only been on for, you know, 4.5 years, I have not had the pleasure of driving a Crown Vic on duty. I have been able to drive it in EVOC and pit training. But to me, when I think of, you know, kind of the, you know, what an American cop car is, you know, the only image that comes to mind is the Crown Vic. So
you had me for a second there. I thought for a second there you were going to say something else, and I was like, this motherfucker.
But no, we do have V6 Explorers. They suck.
Yes, they do. All right, so as you guys know, we're conducting a little science, which, by the way, this science experiment, I have not fucking tallied anything, and I have fucking no idea. I just asked. So it's not a very good science experiment. I would be a fucking piss-poor scientist. But the people need to know, how do you wipe your ass?
Standing. I stand with Saul.
We need to make t-shirts. I stand with Saul. That's the name of the podcast. Oh, you fucking weirdos. God. I stand with Saul. I like
well,
that.
Well, I sent you that that coin suggestion, you know, stand with Saul or lean with Lenny or lean with Lloyd.
Yeah. Okay, but hold on a second. Hold your horses. The bidet thing. Are you a bidet guy?
So I've only ever experienced a bidet one time in my life.
Okay.
And I didn't know that it was a bidet.
And it was a little.
No, not that bad. But it was a little bit of a shock when you're sitting there taking a shit, and then all of a sudden this thing starts spraying water at your ass, and you're like, what the, you know, and you like stand, you know, you stand up and you're like, just, and you're dripping water, and you know, because you're not expecting it. But I think a bidet is a very good, I keep thinking maybe we should install a bidet. Because it would be nice to just have my ass washed right away.
Well, then you wouldn't have to stand.
That's true. You know, I was thinking about it today, and I kind of think, to be honest, I kind of think I do a little bit of a hybrid thing, where the first wipe is more of a lean, but then after that, every wipe after that is standing.
Fucking weird. It's fucking weird. Okay, hold on. say you have to take a shit in like an enclosed area, like a porta potty. Would you stand up in a porta potty?
Why not?
I don't know. I feel too tight. I feel cramped. I don't know.
I guess it depends on the porta potty, because there are some like jumbo porta potties that.
It's true.
You know, true. You could take a nap in there if you wanted to.
All right. Here's the thing. Here's the moment of truth. They don't care about the Philippines. They don't care about the conspiracies. They don't care about shit. Really, the only reason people listen to this podcast, or maybe the only reason people don't listen to this podcast, is this question. Have you ever shit your pants?
Of course. Anybody who says otherwise is a liar. Oh,
you got
I
a
do.
Good story?
So, this was right before I started as a reserve officer. The officer that was in charge of coordinating the reserve volunteers was a night shifter. And the whole process was kind of casual, and he wanted to, so we set up an interview time for, I think it was like, I want to say like 7 p.m. you know, after he'd started his shift and been able to get settled. But before that, I went to dinner at my parents' house, and my parents have this super steep driveway, and it had, I want to say, snowed like it snowed either the day before or earlier that day, and it was kind of slick at the bottom of the driveway. And I kind of eat like shit, and when you eat like shit, your literal shit kind of reflects that, right? I'm also somewhat lactose intolerant. So as I'm leaving dinner to go to this interview, I get to the bottom of the driveway, and I slip and fall. And in the middle of falling, my bowels just let loose, and it was wet.
That is fucking sucks.
And I hit the ground, and I'm like, ah, shit. So I do a quick check and realize that I have just completely shit my pants. And I cannot show up to this interview in, you know, 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever it was, because my parents' place was really close to the department. And so I had to call up the officer and be like, hey, I'm really sorry. I still want to show up for the interview, but I had a wardrobe malfunction, and I gotta go home and change. I gotta go home and change. And I found like a towel or a blanket or something to sit on the drive home. And you know, as luck would have it, as I'm on my way home, I get stuck for a train, and I have to sit there for like 5 minutes as the train is like rolling by. And, you know, I get home, I get changed, and then I get on my way to the apartment, and then I get lost, and I can't find the police department. So I'm like driving around the block, like a couple blocks, trying to find the police department. It's just kind of a perfect shitstorm, so to speak.
Emphasis on shitstorm. Well, buddy, we've come to the conclusion of this very poorly made police podcast. Do you have any words of wisdom to the gazillions of listeners out there?
Yeah. So I'll just say it again. You got to go train in jiu-jitsu or some other combative, like true combative martial art, so that you don't end up on the internet in a bad viral video or in court, you know, on criminal charges or civil suit. The other thing is to just enjoy life outside of work. Don't make work your entire life, you know. You know, work overtime and save money, and you know, get a good budget set up so that you're not having to, you know, keep working after retirement. You can just enjoy life.
Fuck yeah. Well, folks, we've come to the very end of this Poorly Made Police podcast. Thank you for joining us, good sir. I forgot the fucking bullshit name that we made up, so it's fine. You guys remember to take care of the fine sponsors, because without them, these podcasts would not be possible. Make sure, as referenced, you're checking out the achievement coins, all the other fun stuff that me and Ghost Patch are doing. We're always cooking up something new just for you guys. And with that said, remember, if it's icy out, make sure you shit before you leave their house, because if you fall, it's all coming out. And I love most of you. Bye-bye. It's a cool, cool joke that the world played on you on that one.
What, shit in my pants?
Yeah, as you fall, it's fucked up, man.